Cape Talk.
Ask Dr. Josh.
And tonight we are asking Dr. Josh, what happens to children when a parent commits suicide? The 10th of September marked International Suicide Day. And of course, when a parent dies, when anybody dies, it's incredibly painful and incredibly difficult for children. But a parent's death, particularly by suicide, according to the research, a mother's suicide in particular, has an even more painful and potentially disturbing effect. So how do children process that? How do children process the idea that the parent who they've lost has taken their own life? That's what we're talking about with Dr. Josh this evening. It's great to welcome him back to the show. Hello.
Hello. Welcome back.
Thank you very much indeed. Well, thank you to you and your fellow countrymen for welcoming me with open arms to the USA.
Yeah, it is kind of ironic because you came to the States and I was out of the country, although I don't live in San Francisco, and I did grow up in Southern California, and there is a big rivalry between the two. So to hear that you liked San Francisco, but, you know, you're moving on, and the Southern California person in me says, I like that. That's good.
Okay.
You visit San Diego.
Well, so this is what everyone kept saying. They said, you must go to San Diego. That's the place that you'll love. So perhaps I felt a bit suffocated in San Francisco, if I'm honest.
It's gotten crowded.
Very.
California is crowded. But yes, it's very crowded. Again, I'm biased. I lived in San Diego for almost 7 years, and it's beautiful. It's crowded, too. The whole California coast at the top and the bottom, a little bit of space in the middle, is pretty crowded to begin with.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was good. It was good. I enjoyed it very much. A bit of an issue getting into the country, which I'll talk about on tomorrow's show, but they took my passport. It was terrifying. But for this evening... We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Okay.
For now, we're talking about something, and it's difficult. Suicide in and of itself it is particularly difficult, and particularly difficult for those who are affected, those who are left behind, to come to terms with. But even more so, for children, I imagine. And I guess the sense is when there has been a suicide that one is one may be to blame. I know that when my brother committed suicide and I was, you know, I mean, I was 19, 20, and I knew that this was his decision. I knew it really didn't have anything to do with me as a person and there was nothing that I could have done. That still didn't mean that I didn't feel hugely responsible and feel guilty. And I was, you know, 18, 19. I can only imagine how one processes that kind of event sort of at a much younger age, 7, 8, 9, 10 or early teens.
Yeah, well, and you just hit on it. Even at 18 and 19, although that's the sort of the crux of the age in terms of being a child, but even at 18 and 19 and up, those feelings of guilt, confusion, shame, anger, all of those, we experience those as adults, but we have a better ability, most of us, to sort of process it, to tell ourselves otherwise. So to your point, when you're 7, 8, 9, and 10, your cognitive abilities, your psychological abilities to make sense of things are not as developed. So while you may have grappled with it at 18 or 19, a 9 or 10-year-old, they can't even grapple. They can't even begin to dispute it because they may just take on the view that it was my fault. And that's where things are really difficult for children. The other thing that I think is always important, whenever we talk about kids or children, there is a big difference between a 5, 6, 7-year-old or 8 or 9-year-old and a 16, 17, 18-year-old. So we do have to be careful not to just lump, you know, everything from 18 and down all together as children.
So where do we start with that conversation? And I guess the other thing with any death, but particularly with suicide, is that the person who's likely to be discussing the suicide and the death is more often than not going to be the surviving parent or the surviving grandparents who are going through their
own
grief.
That is right. And one of the things, I just want to throw out one bit of research that I think is really important that highlights why we need to be talking about this. This research that was done at Johns Hopkins, and they found that, and you have to kind of follow the detail on this, that they found that when children who are under 18, when their parents commit suicide, when you're under 18, you are, as a child, three times more likely as children whose parents didn't commit suicide to commit suicide yourself.
Wow.
When you're under 18. That's huge. Now, I will say, when what the research found, Sarah Jane, is that when they were over 18 or over, those differences in risk go away. But what it highlights to us is that younger children are not only impacted by this in terms of feeling confused and anxious and maybe depressed, but it puts them at greater risk for committing suicide, which is a huge, huge, serious medical situation.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So where do we begin the conversation? How do we, and I mean, are there things that we should say as opposed to things that we shouldn't say? How in detail do we go? I know that as journalists, when it comes to reporting suicide, and I think with my experience, I'm really passionate about responsible reporting of suicide, using the correct terminology, not using words that are inappropriate or that lead to misunderstanding or confusion. And also, I have to say, and I've been using the term, but committing suicide suggests an element of blame. You've done something that is wrong. Whereas I think perhaps taking one's own life may be better, or mm-hmm. died by suicide would probably mm-hmm. be more responsible. But how important is the language that we use when talking to kids?
It is the most important. To go back to my earlier comment, is that it's age appropriate. So what you're talking about is very important and appropriate, but I think particularly what we have to understand as adults, the first thing we have to check is, how old is this child that I'm talking to? Because talking to a 14-year-old is incredibly different than talking to a 9-year-old. What I mean by that is children need to hear information that they can comprehend, that is simple and age-appropriate. And while anybody who's grieving is going to have a hard time processing information, we just can't hold on to it, our minds are preoccupied, if you're talking to a 9-year-old, you got to keep it a lot more simple than a 14-year-old. So saying things to a 9-year-old like, your mom or dad died, and, well, how did they die? They died by, to your point, they took their life. Well, what does that mean? One of the things that I encourage adults to do when you talk with a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old or a child is be careful not to offer too much information. What I mean by that is let them drive. Let the child drive. You answer questions that they ask. If they don't ask, you don't need to offer it. That does not mean that you're lying. That does not mean that you're trying to cover anything up. But what you're doing is you're simply going at their pace. They ask you two questions, answer two questions. If they ask you one question, answer one question. And let them go at their pace. I actually make that recommendation, Sarah Jane, to anybody who you're speaking to who's trying to process a trauma, because now you're going at a level that they can understand versus our feeling that, I got to tell them. I must tell them. I don't want to withhold anything, or should I withhold? Let them drive the conversation.
Mm-hmm. If you are just joining us on Ask Dr. Josh this evening, we're talking about how to help a child through the very difficult process of grieving when a parent has taken their own life. And one of the things that we're talking about here is the use of appropriate, age-appropriate language. And also in terms of the conversation, how to drive that conversation. And the answer really seems to be you don't drive it as the responsible adult. You allow the child to drive the conversation and to understand, to allow the understanding to come at their own pace. I guess also with suicide is that very, very often there's likely to have been some sort of lead up in terms of the mental health of the parent. So does, it, I guess with that as a kind of forethought, the importance of speaking about mental health issues and what it actually means, that must be incredibly difficult, but something that again, I think in previous times we have tried to hide from our children that one parent may be struggling with mental health issues. But how important do you think it is that also becomes a part of the regular conversation in families if that is what they're living through?
Yes, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because here's the thing, particularly in this day and age, very often, if the parent has suffered from mental illness for a while, when I say mental illness, I mean it could be depression, it could be bipolar, anything. Very often, even a young child, probably not under 4 or 5, but an 8 or 9 year old and up, they know, they may very well know that their parent has had depression. They may very well have, or you may have already well had that conversation with them. So one of the things that I think is important when we're having this conversation about suicide is, did they already know that mom or dad was suffering? Because it's a different conversation than if they had no idea. And in fact, in many cases, particularly if the parents had something like depression for years and years, and you have a 10 or 11-year-old child, as upset as they may be, as angry as they may be, as scared as they may be, they may also be feeling a sigh of relief, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Mom's no longer suffering. So, to your point, do you bring it up? Well, if your child already knows about the mental health, you make it part of the conversation, because that's the truth. If they don't know, then you can say, Mom or Dad was sick for a while. Well, they didn't look sick. Well, they were sick inside. They were, again, if we're talking to a younger child, they were sick inside. Mm. But I will tell you, Sarah Jane, that in this day and age, children, particularly if parents have had this problem for a long time, they know. We don't hide it as much. We can't hide it as much. And I'll even go farther to say that 20 years ago, we hid it, or we tried to hide it, but you can't hide it from a child who's living in the house. They know. They know that something is up.
Let's talk a little bit about the support that kids need after suicide, because when anybody dies, there is, particularly if you're close in that regard, everything in that first week seems to happen very, very quickly. And as an adult, those things that happen are difficult to deal with. As a child, I can only imagine that they are just completely overwhelming. One minute mom or dad is there, the next minute they're not. Then you're at a funeral. And the funeral itself, of course, traditionally is meant to be a part of that grieving process, but these days seems to happen so quickly that, in fact, it becomes almost part of the death itself, and that there's not really, and that in terms of a marker, there is an expectation, I think, often from those outside of, okay, well, the funeral's happened, move on now. Whereas really the funeral, and we found this in our family, was that the funeral was just the very, very beginning. That was the point at which we then, thereafter, had to get used to living without my brother. He wasn't there anymore. Yeah. And as much as we knew that, and the coffin came in and we did all of that, we had to get used to the day to day. He's not there when we pick up the phone, or he's not in the house, or the smell of him isn't there anymore. And I guess as an adult, that's much easier to, I mean, still very painful, but easier to understand. Whereas a child may not realize. And also, I guess we're going back to language, may not have the language, may not have the vocabulary to express how they're feeling or to express the type of support that they need.
Yes, you said a lot there. It is absolutely true. And particularly in suicide, the urgency, the quickness of it. So to your point, a funeral for somebody who has suffered an illness for a long, long time, maybe it's cancer and there's been a time to say goodbye and prepare, then a funeral can bring some closure, although even then, living with them day to day, living without them day to day is hard. When you're talking about something like a suicide, one of the things for younger children in particular that I think we need to focus on is this idea that they tend to be very what we call egocentric. They're worried about themselves. Not because they're narcissistic, but because that's the way they think. So you take a 10-year-old and younger, for example, they're thinking about them. What is my day going to be like without mom here? Who will make my lunch? Who will tuck me in? Will I go? They may even say things that sound almost heartless or careless. How am I going to get to soccer practice? Because what they're doing is, in the back of their mind, they're processing this huge thing. And verbally what they're doing, Sarah Jane, is saying what's the easiest for them to say, which are the more practical sorts of things. To your second point, they may not be able to say, I feel guilty, or I feel regret, or I feel anger, because in fact they may feel that, particularly something like anger, but a younger child knows that anger is not a, you know, that's not a good thing. So as an adult, one of the things we have to do is help read their emotions, read their nonverbals, and ask them questions like, are you feeling angry right now? And basically normalize it. One of the things I always say about grief and the emotions in grief, in the early stages, everything goes. There is nothing wrong. You can feel relieved one minute, happy the next minute, sad the next minute, angry the next minute, guilty the next minute. And what you do in support for a young child is you don't call into question what they're feeling. You acknowledge what they're feeling and let them feel it and don't shut it down.
And I guess that must be incredibly difficult if you are the surviving parent going through their own thing. If you are, as you say, if your kid is saying, but what about soccer practice? What about ballet? How am I getting to this? And you're thinking, how am I going to live the rest of my life without my partner? I guess some of the questions that may come from a child may be quite triggering for the surviving parent.
Oh, unbelievably. And this is why, you know, one of the things we say when there's a tragedy, when there's a trauma, when there's a disaster or a crisis of any sort, support, social support is so critical for the entire family. And what you just highlighted is how it's important for that grieving spouse. They may not be in a position to answer all those questions all the time emotionally, and they may need someone to take over. I'll take you to soccer practice. Don't worry. It may be a friend of the family. So as the person, as the spouse who's left or the adult who's left, one of the things you have to do is you have to pay attention to how much bandwidth do you have. And when you don't have any more, it's okay to smile at your child and to simply say, I'm tired, I'm sad, I love you, and that's all I can give you right now. And that's okay. As long as you're not lashing out at the child, but you're just basically saying, I haven't got anything left right now, that's okay. It's a child is playing off of emotions far more than words. And that's the critical part is, can you hold it together enough so that the child sees that you're stable? Sad? Okay. But stable, because that's what children are looking for.
Yeah. At what point, or what are the signs that parents or teachers or whoever should be looking out for that go above and beyond the normal grieving process? What are the red flags where you think, right, some intervention is required? What should we be looking out for?
One of the difficult parts is you have to give this time, to your point, and time can mean weeks, months. I wouldn't say years, because by the time it's years, we are now saying that there are some problems. I will say that there's an added twist with suicide. If a parent dies and for a child and they go back to school and the word has sort of gotten out, people are much more apt to approach if it was an accident, if it was anything but a suicide, because of the stigma associated with suicide. So one of the problems that a child will have is if the word has gotten out that it was suicide, that child very often will be avoided because by other children, their parents may have said, oh, don't say anything. They killed themselves. Don't say. And so you have the double challenge of not only facing everybody else and getting back to normal, but that strange feel, why is no one talking to me? In general, what we're looking for is do they start making progress back? And so what I mean by that is after a few weeks, 3 weeks to a month, do we start seeing them begin to adapt? Do their grades pull back up? Are they sleeping better? Are they able to engage in some activities that they enjoy? Do we see a smile? Those kinds of things. And three weeks to a month is somewhat arbitrary. But Sarah Jane, if you see after that time that they're still plummeting, that they're still having a hard time even being able to go to school, that's about the time where, let me say this, a mental health professional should be involved day one,
right,
when there's a suicide. But at day 26, 27, 28, if there's not progress, then as a mental health professional, I'm saying they may need some extra help.
So does that being said,
let me just say this. That being said, most children, as much as it's traumatic and as much as they live with it, you experience it yourself. I always want to say this. Most children eventually will bounce back. Kids are incredibly resilient. It doesn't mean we leave them alone, but the likelihood that they won't bounce back is very low. They will bounce back. It just takes some kids a lot longer than others.
Just finally, Dr. Josh, is it that the intervention or that the support that's being offered, should that be a family therapy where everyone's involved, or one-on-one with the child or children?
Yes and yes.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry. So just real quickly, the child may need direct intervention themselves. The family absolutely needs some sort of intervention. It may be with a mental health professional. It could be with clergy. It is just it's sort of a grief intervention. And the adult who is experiencing the loss, they need it independently. We never, as adults, want to process our own mental health problems directly with our children. There may be overlap, but your child is not there to see your demons.
Yeah.
Your child needs to see you as stable
Amen.
As possible. And if you need help, you go get help somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is from my... Yes. Yes, and I'll leave it there. Josh, it's always great to speak to you. Thanks so much. And we will chat again next week.
Thanks, Sarah Jane.